This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib coming up on Africa News Tonight.
There are so many, but the major ones are cardiovascular diseases, cancers, chronic respiratory diseases. The last one is stroke.
That's Dr. Abdi Kamal Ali Salad, Acting Director for Non-Communicable Diseases from the WHO in Congo, Brazzaville, and co-author of a study that found African adults are high at risk of non-communicable diseases. We'll have full details coming up.
Also, UN officials report as many as 20 people are feared dead in Kinshasa after violence broke out during demonstrations. And the European Union says it supports current efforts for a peaceful and smooth transition of power in the Gambia.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, UN officials report as many as 20 people are feared dead in Kinshasa after violence broke out during demonstrations. Protesters were calling for longtime President Joseph Kabila to step down after his term in office expired yesterday. Three deaths have been confirmed by VOA Afrique. Residents in some parts of Congo's capital blew whistles at midnight to signal that it was time for Kabila to leave. Gunfire that was heard in several districts continued today. Much of the capital was deserted with shops closed and people staying home fearing violence.
The Committee to Protect Journalists says Africa this year has seen a fall in killings, but a rise in the number of jailed journalists, a trend that is echoed worldwide. In East Africa, three of the six killed journalists are from Somalia, and the overwhelming majority of jailed journalists are in Ethiopia and Eritrea. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg on Africa's year in journalism.
2016 has been a grim year for African journalism, with six journalists killed and 41 languishing in prisons across sub-Saharan Africa, according to the Committee to Protect Journalists. In 2015, 14 journalists were killed and 34 were in jail in Africa. Worldwide, at least 48 journalists were killed this year, many of them in the conflict zones of Syria, Iraq, Yemen, Libya, and Afghanistan, and 90% were local journalists. Worldwide, there are 259 imprisoned journalists, the highest figure CPJ has documented in at least 16 years of record-keeping. The deadliest African nation for journalists was Somalia, with three journalists killed in a troubled coastal nation that has not had a stable central government for more than two decades. And of the 41 jailed journalists, 33 are in the neighboring countries of Ethiopia and Eritrea, two nations whose governments have been accused of becoming increasingly intolerant of the press amid growing dissatisfaction with their long rule. The director of Johannesburg-based Media Monitoring Africa, William Byrd, says the arrests of the half-dozen Ethiopian journalists run parallel to the rise of anti-government protests. Five of the journalists are being held without charge, and all five had reported critically on the protests.
We've seen, certainly in 2016, significant levels of civil uprising to challenge the lack of freedoms there, and part of the government's default response has been to arrest and detain journalists. They've clearly taken an approach that says the best way of staying in power is to make sure that you crush anyone who opposes you.
In Somalia, former radio journalist Mohamed Ibrahim Mwalimu, who is Secretary General of the National Union of Somali Journalists, says killings in his country are mercifully lower than last year. But he says that could be because so many journalists have already been killed. He counted at least two dozen that he could remember, or fled into exile, or been driven to self-censor. Mwalimu lives in Mogadishu, but spoke to VOA via Skype from Nairobi, where he is attending a journalism workshop.
Some of our colleagues went to other parts of the world, and they fled from Somalia because of their own security. So that's what they want. That's what all those people who want to silence the media want it.
He says he has had two close calls, most recently in January of last year, when he had to play dead to avoid being killed as militants sorted among a heap of fallen bodies and fired bullets into those who appeared to still be alive.
If we all leave and run away from Somalia, that's what these people who want to silence the media want. So we are actually insisting that until the last drop of our blood, we will remain in Somalia and will work. But we still wanted to die for our people because our people deserve to listen and hear what the reality on the ground is.
The six journalists killed in Africa in 2016 covered conflict, corruption, and politics. The only African female journalist killed presented a children's radio show in Somalia. Somali extremists have targeted women who hold prominent leadership roles. Their names were Abdiaziz Ali, Alhaj Mohamed Diallo, Isaac Vuni, Mahad Ali Mohamed, Marcel Lubala, and the lone woman, Sagal Salad Osman. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The European Union says it supports current efforts for a peaceful and smooth transition of power in the Gambia. A spokesman says the EU backs ECOWAS, the African Union, and the United Nations to encourage President Yahya Jammeh to step down yesterday. Jammeh lost the December 1st election to Adama Barrow, but he claims irregularities have caused the vote to be null and void. He wants to appeal the results to the Gambian Supreme Court. Jammeh has been in power for 22 years. The EU says it expects Jammeh to respect the will of the people. The EU calls unacceptable the occupation of the offices of the Independent Electoral Commission by Gambian security forces. Twelve minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Well, a new report released by the World Health Organization reveals that most adults in Africa have at least one risk factor that increases their chances of developing a life-threatening non-communicable disease, or NCD. Among the illnesses they could develop are heart disease, cancer, type 2 diabetes, and chronic obstructive lung disease. The report provides the first in-depth and country-specific data on the prevalence of major risk factors across the continent. It finds that in half of the African countries surveyed, one quarter of adults had at least three of these risk factors. Dr. Abdi Kamal Ali Salad is the acting director for the non-communicable diseases for the WHO in Congo-Brazzaville and co-author of the study. He explains the purpose of conducting the survey.
The purpose of that tool is to gather data or information on the magnitude of the risk factors for non-communicable disease globally, actually. It is a global tool.
In looking at your region, what are the non-communicable diseases?
There are so many, but the major ones are cardiovascular diseases, cancers, chronic respiratory diseases. The last one is stroke.
In your survey, you found that most adults in Africa have at least one risk factor that increases their chances of developing a life-threatening non-communicable disease. So what are these risk factors?
The risk factor is that we usually observe or see are two categories. One is behavior-related risk factors or lifestyle risk factors, which are tobacco use, harmful use of alcohol, consumption of unhealthy diet. The fourth one is physical inactivity. Those are the ones that are related to lifestyle. But then we also have what we call intermediate risk factors. These intermediate risk factors are physiological or biological in nature, and these are obesity, then high blood pressure, high blood sugar, and then the fourth one is high blood cholesterol. So these are what we call the four behavior-related risk factors and four intermediate risk factors that would then lead to major non-communicable disease entity.
Why are more people in Africa now suffering from these diseases that were usually associated with the West?
In Africa, with the growing economy and the changing demographic transition and epidemiological transition, these risk factors and ultimately chronic disease illnesses are becoming more prevalent, because you could see that now these risk factors are increasing, you know, harmful use of alcohol, tobacco use, more sedentary life. As people move from villages, they come to urban centers, and then they acquire the urban lifestyle, you know, because there is transportation everywhere. People walk less. Then the fast food, you could see how the fast food industry is mushrooming and expanding, and people are exposed to all these risk factors that were before very prevalent in a developed country. But now all of these are coming up in urban centers or urban towns in Africa.
What particular countries did you all focus on for this study?
We do it every 5 years in all our countries. For us, we have 47 countries, so about 40 of them have conducted these surveys. We plan to use these kind of studies to, one, to know where are we standing in terms of risk factors and NCDs, and also to see whether the interventions we are implementing are making impact.
And what have you found, considering that about a quarter of adults had at least three of the risk factors in the countries that you all surveyed?
We are encouraging our member states to develop and implement a multi-sectoral action plan. When I say multi-sectoral, means, as you could imagine, controlling NCD risk factors, most of the work lies outside the health sector. So the health sector needs other sectors to collaborate and also do their share of the NCD fight. That is the first step, to bring together all sectors in the government and also the private sector to come together and draw a national plan. Then the second one is to improve our health systems to screen and treat NCDs. Like, for example, hypertension is a very dangerous condition that we all have the tools at the health systems level to screen. The blood pressure monitor is available in all health centers. So what we want is every adult be screened for hypertension or be screened for cervical cancer for women, so that at least that early stage, when we pick up people who have the condition or who are more risk of developing NCDs, then be counseled and treated as well.
That was Dr. Abdikamal Ali-Salad, Acting Director of Noncommunicable Diseases for the WHO. He spoke with me from Congo, Brazzaville.
In southeastern Chad, the medical aid group Doctors Without Borders is trying to stop the spread of the disease known as hepatitis E. The disease can severely damage the liver and can be fatal to pregnant women, VOA's Jody Kapua reports.
Sick people with yellow eyes. That's how residents in the city of Omdurman often describe someone suspected of having hepatitis E. It can cause jaundice, or a yellow discoloration in the eyes or skin. Doctors Without Borders, also known as MSF, says Hep E can have serious consequences for maternal and fetal health. These include aborting the fetus, bleeding after birth, premature babies, stillbirth, or death. David Beversluis is the MSF project coordinator for the Hepatitis E Response Project in Omdurman.
Hepatitis E is a viral illness. It's a virus that causes acute inflammation of the liver after it's transmitted through contact with fecal material, basically. People's hands can spread this virus, and it can also be spread through contaminated water.
He says there's no specific treatment for the virus, so doctors often treat the symptoms, like vomiting or dehydration. It may take 4 to 6 weeks to develop after infection, and another 4 to 6 weeks to resolve itself with supportive care. He says Hep E started to appear in the Chad city a few months ago.
So we noticed through our networks and in the hospital in early September a number of cases that we thought were suspicious for hepatitis E. There were several pregnant women all within the course of a week who came in with kind of yellow eyes with jaundice. Two of them got quite sick and died very early on. So that raised a bunch of flags for us.
The mortality rate for the disease is roughly 1 in 25, but it can be as high as 1 in 4 for pregnant women. Beversluis says most of the cases have been found in Omdurman, but HEPI infections have begun to show up outside the city.
How widespread it is in the entire region, it's hard to say. Some of the outer-lying region of southeastern Chad, we're not visiting very regularly, so it may be that there's cases there.
Doctors Without Borders is trying to disrupt the chain of transmission of hepatitis E through prevention programs.
Improving the hygiene quality in the city by improving water quality and trying to kill this virus in the water on people's hands so that we really can try to avoid the spread of the disease before it causes all the mortality and the deaths in the pregnant women.
Beversluis says efforts are underway to clean the drinking water. The nearby river and a number of wells are contaminated.
The practice of chlorination, which is pretty common in a lot of the world, is not happening here. And so even in the city water supply, there's a risk of contamination and no chlorination that can kill this virus.
MSF has set up small water chlorination programs at about 75 points around Omdurman. Chlorine is put in buckets used to collect water. It's also working with the local government to add chlorine to the local water supply system. The medical aid group also has distributed hygiene kits to 10,000 households, or about 75,000 people. And it's distributed buckets, jerry cans, and over 300,000 bars of soap. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
In Zimbabwe, Education Minister Jonathan Moyo has announced the rebirth of the country's college loans and grants program. Moyo says the financial aid package will launch in 2017, 11 years after a similar program was suspended because of lack of funds. The announcement was made at the weekend national conference of the ruling ZANU-PF party in Masvingo. Moyo said the nation needs well-educated human capital to lead in the modernization of the country's troubled industries.
Mali government officials have said they will not help the European Union identify and return illegal Malian migrants to the country. Ongoing talks on the issue are part of a larger effort by the EU to try to curb migration via cooperation with key countries of origin, a strategy that resulted in a multi-million-dollar deal with Niger earlier this month. Katerina Hoya files from Bamako.
In Mali, negotiations on facilitating migrant returns have caused a stir. Following terms of the proposed deal detailing the presence of civil servants in Europe to help authorities there identify Malians there illegally. The government's main concern is the safety and well-being of Malians abroad, Foreign Minister Abdoulaye Diop told reporters in Bamako on Monday.
Le président Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta, président de la République du Mali, accorde la plus grande importance.
He said the question of Malian migrants and refugees is a matter of the heart to the president and himself. He also said civil servants traveling to Europe to identify migrants who have had their asylum requests rejected is out of the question at the moment. The EU is currently negotiating a $116 million deal with Mali to expedite the return of migrants to the African country. The talks cover a number of areas, including providing the funds to help job creation and assistance in fighting people smuggling to prevent Malians from heading to Europe. The negotiations are the most detailed yet between Brussels and an African country.
Je le dis, je le répète, aucun accord n'a été signé avec l'Union européenne, ni accord de réadmission.
Diop said no deal has been reached and that negotiations will continue. He said any deportations of Malian citizens from the EU needs to be conducted with respect for human rights. The two parties will also work to create jobs for young Malians while Malian authorities plan to issue identity cards and biometric passports to help track migrants. So far, the EU has reached agreements with a handful of African countries, including Sudan and Mali's neighbour Niger. EU border agency Frontex has estimated that more than 10,000 Malians have entered the bloc since the start of 2015. This month, Algeria rounded up and deported 260 Malians. Katerina Haye for VOA News, Bamako.
Researchers in Britain have found a novel class of drug that they say has the potential to slow memory loss, even restoring some memory and extending the lives of people living with Alzheimer's. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
According to the Alzheimer's Association, globally an estimated 47 million people, mostly older adults, suffer from Alzheimer's disease, a neurodegenerative condition that robs sufferers of their memory and eventually leads to death. But researchers, first at the University of Leicester, who are now at the University of Glasgow in Scotland, have found a new class of drug that not only slows memory loss, but appears to restore it, as well as extending life in a mouse model of Alzheimer's. The drug, called allosteric ligands, targets a protein that's involved with memory. As patients with Alzheimer's progress, the protein in a brain region called the hippocampus becomes less active. But the experimental drug appears to activate the protein, called M1 muscarinic receptor, slowing and restoring some memory loss that's associated with the disease. Andrew Tobin, professor of molecular biology at University of Glasgow, is lead author of the work published in the Journal of Clinical Investigation. For reasons that are not entirely clear yet, Tobin says ligands also extended the life of mice.
It probably is a distinct biochemical pathway. It's still going through this receptor, but it's doing something else in the brain, which is protecting the neurons from neurodegeneration. And the big question that we have in the lab is, what is that mechanism? What is the biochemical mechanism that underlies that response? And of course, that's the next thing we'll be looking at.
Current treatments for Alzheimer's are designed to improve symptoms, and researchers say their work represents an actual treatment. The experimental compound was tested in a mouse model of Alzheimer's. The animals were bred to exhibit signs of mad cow disease, which looks similar to Alzheimer's in humans in terms of memory loss, progression, and death. On a memory test, the treated rodents were able to recall receiving a mild electric shock when challenged. Without the compound, Tobin says, control mice did not remember the stimulus. Tobin cautions that a drug is probably 5 to 10 years away.
These advances take us forward a step at a time, and whereas they do give a lot of hope, I think, to people in this area, that it's not an immediate cure for a relative that you have at the moment.
The research by Tobin and colleagues was supported by Britain's Medical Research Council and the Wellcome Trust Charitable Foundation. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Tuesday on Health Chat. Host Lenore Modu will discuss juvenile arthritis with guest Aida Mourad, arthritis patient and advocate. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.